Boker Tov, greetings and welcome to the beginning of our study of Masechet Megillah. It promises to be a very enjoyable time, and according to the schedule that we have set out for ourselves, we are aiming to complete the entire study of Masechet Megillah right around the Festival of Purim, and hopefully this will give us added enlightenment and understanding and appreciation and exuberance for the upcoming Chag of Purim. Two notes of introduction. First of all, Purim stands out as the only holiday that we have which is founded only in other books of the Tanakh besides the Chumash, and which introduces laws that are not found anywhere else, that are not found in the Chumash. In other words, laws that are initiated afterwards. The law of the reading of the Megillah and the various components of celebration of Purim, which we will discuss relatively briefly on Daf Zayin in a number of days. That brings up a host of problems which are already alluded to in a piece that we're going to see today, which is the rights and the purview of later prophets and of later rabbis to initiate holidays and initiate new laws. The interested reader is directed to the Ramban's commentary on Sefer Dvarim in Perek Dalet on the Pasuk Lo Tosef, that you the prohibition of adding onto the mitzvot, has a protracted discussion there. However, we will encounter some pieces here in our study of Masechet Megillah that will prove illuminative. In addition, one local component that will drive our discussion this morning and on Sunday is the issue of the days of Purim. Now, on the webs, on the site, on this podcast, I have linked to a shiur that I wrote a number of years ago that presents several of the approaches of the Rishonim and tries to explain them and find the points of difference and the points of agreement between them. About explaining the reason why Purim is celebrated on different days in the different cities. That is presented to us immediately in the Mishnah in somewhat of an awkward fashion, telling us that even though we are familiar with the 14th and the 15th of Adar, both for our own celebration, also from the Megillah, as we see in Pasuk number 5, on the page, and in one or two other places in Masechet Megillah. Nonetheless, our Mishnah presents also the 11th, 12th, and 13th of Adar as days not of celebrating Purim, but of days in which it is possible to fulfill the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah under certain circumstances for certain people in certain places. So we will see that right away. On the handout, I have selected three halachot from Perek Aleph of the Rambam's presentation of Halachot Megillah. The interested reader will find some helpful background to our shiur there. The Mishnah begins, Mikilah nikreit be'achadasar, be'shneimasar, be'shloshasar, be'arba'asar, be'chamishasar, lo pachot ve'lo yoter. And the Megillah may be read on the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th, not earlier and not later. In other words, that is the time range within which the Megillah must be read. That statement alone seems to indicate that any time during those 5 days you could read the Megillah and that would be fine. That is, of course, not the case, and therefore the Mishnah immediately clarifies as follows. Krachina mukafin choma mimot Yoshua bin Nun. Any cities that are walled from the times of Yoshua bin Nun, and we will see in the Gemara why it is the time of Yoshua bin Nun that according to our Tana and the Halakha is the time frame that determines its status vis-a-vis Mikra Megillah. And we will also find that it does not matter whether that wall is still standing as long as there was a wall during the times of Yoshua bin Nun. In other words, during the times of the conquest of Eretz Yisrael by Bnei Yisrael. So such cities, Korim b'chamishasa, they read on the 15th. Kfarim v'ayarot gedolot, Korim b'arba'asar. So villages and other larger cities, in other words, any cities without a wall, read on the 14th. So if you, that's the 14th and 15th. So how did you get 11, 12, 13? Ela shakfarim maktimin liyom haknisa. But the villagers are able to read early going back to the Yom HaKnisa. Yom HaKnisa is market day when the villagers who were farmers would bring their wares into the city to trade them. They'd be coming in. This is the reason that Ezra established Monday and Thursday as the days in which the Beit Din is in session. And this is why, consequently, Monday and Thursday were established as the days of the public Torah reading, so at least the people coming in would have some Torah that they would hear. When they would come in to trade, and they would come in to litigate if necessary. And that is the presentation. Now that's Mishnah Aleph. Mishnah Bet gives a layout of every possible calendar configuration and who would read on each day. I have attached to the website a chart that lays the Mishnah out quite clearly. So advised to print it out or take a look. But we'll go through the Mishnah now systematically. And we will find that any time that the 14th is itself on a market day, so everyone but the walled cities reads on that day. There are two particular dates here which are subject to dispute, and our Mishnah presents one approach, but there are other approaches. Ketzad. Let's see how it goes. Chaliyot ba'asar b'sheni. If the 14th of Adar falls out on a Monday, so kfarim v'ayorok d'lod korin b'bayom, all the villagers and the cities, the towns, read on that day, because it's a market day, so the villagers can read. They're coming into town anyways. And the cities read. Now, by the way, why do the villagers have to have a market day? Because by and large, the villagers were not literate enough, shall we say, to read the Megillah. Often they lived in dispersed areas, so they couldn't even congregate. So if an individual knew how to read, fine, what would the rest of them do? So they would come into the city, and that raises another halachic problem, because that means that likely a city person, who himself was not going to be reading Megillah that day, would read on their behalf. How can he read on their behalf if today is not a day in which he is chayav? That's a question that Rishonim deal with. Umukafot chamal machar. So if the 14th is on a Monday, as the chart indicates, then all of the villages and the towns and the unwalled cities read on Monday, and the walled cities read on Tuesday, the 15th. Chaliyot bashlishi o barvi'i, if the 14th is on a Tuesday or Wednesday, kfarim makdimim liyamakrisa, the villages go back to Monday, which means they go back to either the 13th or the 12th of Adar. And the cities, the unwalled cities, read on that day, Tuesday or Wednesday, the 14th. And the walled cities then will read on the next day, which is either Wednesday or Thursday, which is the 15th. Parenthetically, why are the 14th and the 15th different? That is something that we're going to take a look at already in this morning's shiur. Again, the interested reader is strongly advised to read through the 9th chapter of Megillat Esther to see the background of the celebration and the different days and why the 14th and the 15th play out the way they do. Chaliyot b'chamishi, if the 14th comes out on a Thursday, then we have the same status as if it fell out on a Monday. Kfarim v'ayorok d'olot korim b'bayom, mukafot chamal l'machar. Very easy, everybody reads on Thursday except for the walled cities who read on Friday. Now it gets tricky. Chaliyot erev Shabbat. If the 14th is a Friday, so part of it is easy. Kfarim maktimin liyamaknisa. The villagers go back to the 13th, which is Thursday. So according to our Tana, the cities will read on their normal day, the 14th, which is a Friday. And the walled cities go back to read on a Friday also. The Gemara will explain why we do not have the public reading of Megillah on Shabbat. It is essentially the same reason that we do not sound the shofar or shake the lulav, although there are some nuanced differences between them, and some very large differences between them. But we do not read Megillah on Shabbat. Therefore, when the 15th is on Shabbat, they read on the 14th, according to our Tana, which means that the walled cities and the unwalled cities are all reading on the same day, which raises a particular problem in the Gemara. Chaliyot b'Shabbat, if the 14th is on Shabbat, then kfarim v'ayorot g'dolot makdimim korin liyom haknisa. Interesting. Is that the unwalled cities go back to Thursday, which means they read on the 12th, as opposed to reading on the 13th, which is as close as possible to the right day, or reading on the 15th, which is the walled city's day, they read on Thursday. Umukafot choma lemachar. And the walled cities, of course, read on Sunday, because that's their day. Chaliyot achar Shabbat, if it's on Sunday, if the 14th is on Sunday, then kfarim makdimin liyom haknisa, the villagers go back to Thursday, which is the 11th, the earliest possible day to read, at least from the perspective of this Mishnah, v'ayarog d'olot korim b'bayom, and the regular cities read on Sunday, u'mukafot choma l'machar, and the walled cities read the next day. So the Gemara will immediately try to clarify the source for these multiple and, so we say, the varied options of days to read, depending on where you live and what the circumstance is, etc. So the Gemara immediately asks Menalon. Now, Menalon normally is asking for a source. And the Gemara takes us in a slightly different direction first and then gets to the source. They at this point assume that Manalan means not so much where do we get it from, but what's the reason? Why is it that the Megillah may be read by the villagers early? What do you mean? We have a braita that we mentioned later. Chachamim hekelu ala kfarim. The Chachamim were lenient regarding the villages. Lehiot makdimin liyom haknisa, to allow them to read early on the market day. Kadeshi sabku mayim azom lachem shabak rachim, so that they will be available to bring in their food, etc., on market day for their brethren who live in the big cities. In other words, just like we have today, we, many of us, live in an urban setting, and we rely on the farmers and farm companies to bring in food on time so we will have fresh vegetables and milk, etc. So the same thing, in order to make sure that the villagers bring the food in on time, we allow them to not have to make an extra trip into the village on the 14th, but rather they can double up and on their market day also read Megillah. So now we know the reason, but what's the source? And why do we need a source is also part of the problem I mentioned at the beginning, the fact that the mitzvah, Mikra Megillah, and the holiday of Purim is all Durabanan, or should we say, Midivrei Kabbalah. In other words, from the Tanakh, from Ketuvim. Therefore, we have a problem of where the source is for this particular thing, and why is it important that we have a source. So let's clarify the problem. Anan Hachi Kamrin, this is what we meant. Mechde Kulu Anshei Knesset HaGdolah Taknina. We must assume that Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, and a word for a moment about the editing and canonization of Megillat Esther, is that the Megillat Esther in its skeletal form was evidently authored by Esther and Mordechai. However, it clearly went through some editing, as is evidenced in the 9th chapter when the text testifies the Jews have been celebrating Purim for generations already, which means it's already generations after the fact that the text is finally edited and completed in the form that we have it. As a result of that, we ascribe the final editing of it. You know, the canonization comes later, and that's a dispute we will see in a couple of daf. But the final editing of it too, Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the men of the Great Assembly, which takes us somewhere between the period of Ezra and the Greek conquest, perhaps. So since our assumption is that all five possible days were established by the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, meaning that they are somehow buried in the text, and what's the reason that we assume that they established all five? Because if you assume that Anshei Knesset HaGdolah only established the 14th and the 15th, Atu Rabbanan ve'akri takanta takinu Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, do you think later rabbis, who then would have added 11th, 12th, and 13th, would be usurping and uprooting the ordinance of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah? Now here's how this question works. If the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah said every Jew is obligated to read the Megillah on the 14th or the 15th, depending what city you live in, and then later rabbis come along and say, we're going to expand it. Not expand the obligation, but expand the opportunities. And say, you may now read on the 11th, or the 12th, or the 13th, and fulfill your mitzvah, and then you're exempt on the 14th. They're essentially uprooting the original takanah. And they can't do that because, Vahatnan, the very famous Mishnah in Masechet Eduyot, Ein Beit Din Yachol Levatel Divrei Beit Din Chaveiro, no court may overturn the rulings of another court, Ela Im Kein Gadol Mimenu B'Chochmah V'Minyan, unless it is greater than that original court, in both wisdom and in number. The wisdom is clearly something hard to measure, but in number, and the Knesset HaGdolah was 120, when no later court was that large, which means any takana of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah ipso facto can't be overturned, which means now we have to identify somewhere in the original establishment of the holiday of Purim an allusion or an opening to have the 11th, 12th, and 13th be as optional days. Ela pshita kulu Anshei Knesset HaGdolah takino. Must be that they established all of them. So hey charamiza, that is our question. Where is there an allusion? Where is there a hint in the text to these extra days? Because the 14th and the 15th are explicit in the text. So we got to find three extra days in the text. So we have two approaches, each one based on a different pasuk in Megillat Esther. Approach one. Amar Rav Shimon bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So one student of Rabbi Yochanan said as follows. Amar kra l'kayem et yimei ha'purim ha'ele. In chapter 9 of Megillat Esther, it says, the Jews should fulfill these days of Purim bizman nehem, in their times. All plural, their and times. Zmanim ha'betik nulahem. That's a lot of times, meaning there's a lot of different days. So ha'im ba'ele l'gufei, what do you mean? That verse is needed for its own purpose, meaning that they established that Purim be celebrated in a particular time and not just whenever you want. So im ken lemakrazman, if that's so, then the text you would just have to say lekayemet yimei purim ha'ela bazman. Do purim and it's fine. My zmanehem. Why does it say zmanehem? Zmanim tuva, lots of times. V'akatim ba'elei zmano shel zeh, lo ki zmano shel zeh. But we have another very important drasha we're going to get to a little bit later this morning, which is that zmano shel zeh, lo ki zmano shel zeh, meaning that zmanehem is there to say not only that there are many times, but there are distinct times. The time for this city is not the time for that city. And you don't have the option of saying, well, I'd rather read on the walled city day or the unwalled day. Wherever you are, that's its time. So we need zmanehem for that. So im kein lemakra zmanam. If that's the case, then it should have said lekayem yimei purim ha'ela bizmanam, in their time. Zmanam, their time. My zmanehem. Why does it say their times? Double plural. Shamet minat kulu. So that teaches us everything. The essential message that you have to read it in its proper time. The fact that there are different times, each of one is distinct and belongs to a city unique, a locale uniquely, and the fact that there are other days included. So now, Ema zmanim tuva, zmanehem dumya dizmanam. So now, good. So now I've got multiple times, so the most that I can expand it is to be parallel with the times that are explicit in the text. Ma zmanam trei, just like the times that I already have in the text are 2 days, 14th and 15th. Avzmanehem trei. So that means I'm going to add another 2 days. Remember, we've got to add 3 days. No, so ve'ema trei ser pleisar. So maybe it's the 12th and the 13th. Maybe all that the rabbis allowed for was the 12th and the 13th. So the answer is, Karam Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak, shlosha asar zman kilal hakol hi. Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak said, the 13th was zman kilal hakol. The way Rabbi Natan reads it is, if you read the story of Megillat Esther, you see the 13th of Adar was the day that all Jews in Shushan and everywhere else gathered to fight their enemies. The Jews in Shushan needed another day. But everyone gathered on the 13th, Velot Sarich L'Rabuye, and therefore you don't need a verse to include it. Now, this is a little bit strange because all we have is the 14th and the 15th. But what it really means is that the 13th is a much stronger candidate for a Purim day than the 12th. So therefore, if you're going to have 2 days that we're adding, then we assume the 2 days will be somewhat on a par. So the 2 days can't be the 12th and 13th because the 13th is much stronger than the 12th, right? So therefore, hachanami shlosha asar zman kilal hakol hi velo tzarich l'ribuye. So we take his statement and we apply it over here. So now I need 2 days, neither of which can be the 13th. So ve'em ha'sheitzer v'sheivsar. So maybe it's the 16th and 17th. So maybe it's the 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th. And then you could argue whether or not the 13th would come in. The answer is that if you take a look at Pasuk number 2 on the page, the Jews were commanded to fulfill the days of Purim v'lo ya'avor, which in simple reading of the text means it will never be annulled and it'll never be canceled and they'll never stop celebrating. But the way that we're reading it midrashically is v'lo ya'avor means you can't pass the 15th. The 15th is the last day of Purim. K'tiv. So therefore we can't add the 16th and 17th. We have to add before. All right? So that's the first opinion. In the name of Yochanan, which is that Zman Nehem gives me 2 more days than the days that are already in the text. The 2 days that are in the text are 14th and 15th. I can't add later, I have to add earlier. I can't add the 13th and 12th because 13th and 12th are imbalanced relative to each other. They're not really a matched pair. Therefore, I add the 11th and 12th, and then Kal Vachomer, I include the 13th. And that's how we get the 5 days. That's approach number one. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar, he has a different pasuk. The Jews celebrated in the future, simple pshat in this pasuk number 3, is just like the days that the Jews rested in the old times, now they continue to. But now we darshan kayamim, yamin kayamim, meaning days, and then like those days. So the days that we have are the 14th and 15th. We got another 2 days like those days. So that includes the 11th and 12th. And now we're going to go through the same back and forth that we just went through in the other pasuk. The Ema Treisa or Pleisa, maybe it's the 12th and 13th. So Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak, Shlosha Zaman, Zvan Kilal HaKolhi, Velo Tzarich L'Rabuye. He says the 13th was the time of everyone gathering, and therefore we don't need to expand it again to include it, and meaning again, it's not matched to the 12th. The Ema Sheitza V'Sheivsa, maybe it's the 16th and 17th, Velo Yavor K'tiv, again. Now that we have the two approaches, Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani and Rabbi Yochanan, why did each one not accept the other's approach? Why didn't he accept Zmanehem? So the answer is zman zmanam zmanayam lo mashmalay. He doesn't accept that there is an essential difference in the meaning of the words zman and zmanam and zmanayam. In other words, that very fine nuance that we picked up on, he just doesn't buy it. And certainly it is equivocal. Rav Shimon bar Abba, why doesn't he accept kayamim? Exactly as the Pshat reads, that the Jews will celebrate these days in the future, just like the days they celebrated now. Yamim, kayamim, not meaning we're adding another 2 days, but rather that they will continue celebrating. Before we move ahead, just one note about this sugya. It is quite clear that the reason for 11th, 12th, and 13th, quite clear in the Mishnah, is because we need to extend it as far back as necessary to a market day. And the furthest back that it would have to go for a market day would be the 11th if the 14th was on a Sunday. Once that already exists, then we are trying to find an allusion in the text that allows us to extend Purim that far back. Continuing on, Amar Rabba Bar Barchana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan has a comment about our Mishnah, and we have two versions of this comment. In version number one, he says, Zu divrei Rabbi Akiva stimeta'a. The ruling in our Mishnah, is based on the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, and he calls him stimeta'a, meaning in our Mishnah, the Mishnah is unattributed, but it really is Rabbi Akiva working behind the authorship of the Mishnah. The dar is man's manam's manayim. If you recall, a couple minutes ago, we saw the Rabbi Yochanan's approach to understanding the extension to 11, 12, and 13 was based on Zmanayim. And so he says, that's Rabbi Kiva's drasha. So Rabbi Yochanan, in this first version, which will be a very difficult version, says that the Chachamim disagreed with Rabbi Akiva, and they said, you can only read Megillah on the 14th and the 15th. Meitabe, we have a challenge to this. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda had the following caveat, or a limitation about the ability to read on the 11th, 12th, and 13th. When do we say that you can read on the 11th, 12th, and 13th? When the years are the way that they should be, and Am Yisrael is sitting on their land. Meaning, essentially, when the Mikdash is up. In other words, up until the time of the Churban. Shashanim Ketiknan, as Rashi points out, means that the years are being intercalated by the Beitin, etc., etc. Aval bizmanazeh, meaning the time of the Churban or somewhat after that, ho'ilu mistaklimba in korinot ala bizmanah. Ho'ilu mistaklimba, and I didn't put this on the sheet, but what it means is, since the anim are anticipating, they look towards Mikra Megillah to get their matanot lev yonim, therefore we have to read the Megillah in the proper time so that they won't look forward and then have to wait a couple days to get matanot lev yonim. That seems to be the pshat of Ho'il Umistaklimba En Koreota Ella Bizmana. Alright. Now, Rabbi Yehuda, I'll leave it in mind. Now the challenge is as follows. Rabbi Yehuda's caveat of saying that the 11th, 12th, and 13th is only then, but not now, whose opinion is he following in the Machlok Rabbi Kiva Chachomi? If he is putting a limitation within Rabbi Akiva, so Philip is one Rabbi Akiva evidently holds that even in our day, or at least in the times of the later times of the Mishnah, the 11th, 12th, 13th is available. So it can't be Rabbi Yehuda, can't be talking in within Rabbi Akiva's opinion. And the lava, leave it Rabbanan, must be that he's saying within Rabbanan's opinion. So that means that according to the Chachamim, if Rabbi Yehuda is explaining the Chachamim, he's saying, oh, today we don't do it anymore, but in the old days when things were the way they should be, then we did it. Which means that Chachamim don't fundamentally disagree with Rabbi Akiva. They just disagree about whether to continue this practice in our day. So Tiyufta Rabbi Yochanan Tiyufta. So Rabbi Yochanan has now been effectively refuted that it is not the case that Rabbi Akiva holds that the 11th, 12th, 13th is available at all times, in all situations, and that the Chachamim disagree and say it's never accessible, because here we find Rabbi Yehuda stating not his own opinion, but a limitation within the accepted opinion, which is that it only existed then and not now, which fits neither of Rabbi Yochanan's positions. So Rabbi Yochanan's been refuted, but now there's another version of Rabbi Yochanan that sits better. Ikeda Amri, Amar Rabbi Baruchana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Zudi Rabbi Kiva Stimta, Chachamim Omrim, Bizman Hazeh, Hu Mistaklim Ba, Ein koreno ta elabiz mana. So according to the second version, he said, our Mishnah, meaning it's codified in the Mishnah to have the 11th, 12th, 13th, meaning even after Am Yisrael are not settled on their land properly, that's Rabbi Akiva. But Chachamim say that because today we are no longer properly on our land, then for you have to read on the 14th and 15th, which means in version number two, everybody agrees, Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva all agree that fundamentally there is the permit to read on the 11th, 12th, and 13th for the villagers. The dispute between them is whether that permit ceases when we are no longer settled as should be, according to Chachamim, or Rabbi Akiva, it still continues. Tanya Namihachi, now the challenge that we had becomes support. I'm a Rabbi Yehuda, or Yehuda said in the Braita, when do we say Mondays and Thursdays before the 14th? Our reading days? Only when Am Yisrael is settled properly in the land. But because we use it and anticipate the Matanot of Yonim, therefore we read it only in its time. Now, Rav Ashi, as sort of a coda to this, Kashalei Rabbi Yehuda out of Rabbi Yehuda. He found a contradiction between two statements of Rabbi Yehuda. And as a result of that, he said that the author of the Braita that we just read, that the permit of the 11th, 12th, and 13th only existed in a certain time and no longer, is not really Rabbi Yehuda, it's Rabbi Yehuda's son of Rabbi Yossi. And here's the challenge. Since when did Rabbi Yehuda say that the permit no longer exists because people are anticipating the Kriyat HaMegillah and therefore we have to read it on the proper time? Urmini, we challenge that. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, the self-same Rabbi Yehuda said, he said that when, or more accurately, where do we apply the permit to read 11th, 12th, 13th? Only in places where the market day is Monday and Thursday. Meaning, even today. But anywhere where they don't have a market day on Monday and Thursday, like in Sidon, where they had the market day on Friday, or they had a market day on another day, or they had no set market days. And Korino Talibiz Mana, there's Rabbi Yehuda now is saying nothing has changed. He's saying the original permit to read on early was only when there were fixed market days, which were Monday and Thursday. If it was something else, then that permit doesn't exist. Which means this version of Rabbi Yehuda maintains that nothing has changed that makes the permit no longer usable. He says simply the original permit to read early was only in a given circumstance, and that remains true eternally. So it's clear from this version of Rabbi Yehuda, the statement of Rabbi Yehuda, that in a place where they do enter the cities on Mondays and Thursdays, you read it even bisman hazeh, even in our day. And so Rashi identified this contradiction. So therefore he said the first Braita, the one that said it no longer is in effect, was not Rabbi Yehuda, but rather Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. And now we don't like the methodology. We say, just because he found a challenge within Rabbi Yehuda, or a contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda, he's going to say, okay, we'll fix it. That one's Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. So the answer is, I mean, that seems like a very simple and intellectually dishonest way of solving the problem. So the answer is, Rashi Shmielei Deika Tani LaKrabi Yehuda, Deika Tani LaKrabi Yosef Yehuda. The answer is, Rashi heard the Braita in two names. He heard some people saying it in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, as we had it, and some people taught it in the name of Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. And now, we Nekashalei Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yehuda, and now that he found that if we accepted it as Rabbi Yehuda, we would have a contradiction, Amar, Manda Tanadok Rabbi Yehuda, he came to the following conclusion. Whoever taught it in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, Lav Davka. He wasn't very careful. In other words, he said Rabbi Yehuda, it was really Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. He wasn't being very careful about the transmission. Manda Tanadok Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, whoever taught it in the name of Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, Davka, was being very careful. In other words, Rav Ashi heard this same Braita in the name of two different rabbis, a father and a son. Originally, that could have meant a lot of things. It could have meant that both of them said it, and the son was repeating what the father said. It could mean that one version was right, the other version was right, unclear. But the minute that he identified that if we accept Rabbi Yehuda as the author, we have a problem within Rabbi Yehuda, he said, aha, it must be that Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is the real author, and whoever taught it, and Rabbi Yehuda was not being very careful, was being a little sloppy. Okay, on the next piece, we quote the Mishnah that says, Krachim HaMukafin Chomam Mimot Yoshua Bin Nun, Koyim B'Chamisha Asar. Now, that means any city that was walled since the time of Yehoshua. Why is it that Yehoshua's time is the effective time? It actually seems to work against the story, in which it should be that any city that was walled at the time of Shushan should be the criterion. So, Minhanimili, what's the source for this? Here we have a dispute between the Bavli and Yerushalmi. Obviously, we're going to see the Bavli. I'll first mention the Yerushalmi's very famous explanation, which the Rambam quotes, which is that because Eretz Yisrael was in ruins at the time of the story, and they wanted to give Kavod la Eretz Yisrael, in other words, Purim is a holiday which is totally about exile, totally about removal from Israel and an existence outside of Israel. Therefore, the Chachamim wanted to introduce some of the glory of our history into the Halakha. They said, okay, so we'll associate it with the times of Yeshua, which of course is a very proud and storied era of our past. The Bavli has a different direction. Amar Rava, the Amar Kra, he quotes the Pasuk in Megillah, in Peretet, Akena Yudima Prazima Shvim Barea Prazot Osimit Yomar Ba'asar. Therefore, the Jews in the unwalled cities fulfill it on the 14th. Now, Mida Prazim Bar Ba'asar Mukafim B'chamishasar. Before we get to why Yehoshua bin Nun is the criterion, we have another question, which is why we have two different times. The Megillah says that the Prazim read on the 14th. So what conclusion do we come from that? What's our implication? Mide Prazim b'arba'asar b'kafin b'chamishasar. So it must be if the unwalled city is on the 14th, and we know that the 2 days of Purim are the 14th and the 15th, that we have in the Megillah several times. Therefore, it must be that the walled cities, anything that's not an unwalled city, is on the 15th. So now, Ve'ema Prazim b'arba'asar m'kafin klal klalo. Wait a second, the Pasuk doesn't say all Jews read, and the unwalled city is on the 14th, and therefore everybody else on the 15th. The Pasuk just says that the unwalled cities read on the 14th. So maybe the unwalled cities don't read at all. This piece is quoted in the Ramban's very famous commentary, and it's in that shir that I mentioned, is linked on the website. So what kind of notion is that the walled cities wouldn't read at all? V'lav Yisrael ninu? What, they're not Jews? All Jews have to celebrate Purim. V'yod mehod v'yod kush k'tiv. Plus, the first pasuk in Megillat Esther says that Ahasuerus ruled from the Indus River into Africa, which means all cities there, including walled cities, were under the threat of Haman's decree, which means that people in the walled cities also have to celebrate. So I can't say that they don't read at all, but I have another option. So maybe the text that says that the unwalled cities read on the 14th, and then the implication is that the walled cities have to read on the 14th and the 15th. So the answer is kedichtiv liyoto simit yomar ba'asar lechodesh adar ve'et yom chamisha asar bo b'chol shana v'shana. If you take a look at pasuk number five on the page, it describes the 2 days of Purim as et yom ha'arba'asar lechodesh adar ve'et yom chamisha asar bo, as two separate days. So iyaviktavet yom arba'asar v'chamisha asar, if it said to keep the 14th and 15th, then I would understand the 14th and 15th might be a 2-day holiday, at least for some. But now that it says the 14th and the 15th as separate days, it's a little harder to translate the distinction. Ata etu pasik, the word et, which comes before the direct object in the accusative case in Hebrew, upasik, it breaks it up. Hani bar ba'asar, these read on the 14th, v'hani b'chamishasar. In other words, the way the pasuk is constructed, it does not present Purim as a 2-day holiday, but rather as 2 days of holiday, one of which applies to you and one of which applies to others. So I still have another option here, which is ve'ema prazim bar ba'asar, mukafini bar ba'asar, bar b'chamishasar. So now I know that the 14th and 15th are optional, alternative days for Purim, so maybe the prazim, based on the verse, have to read on the 14th. And maybe the mukafin, the walled cities, have the choice, 14th or 15th. So the answer is Amar Kra Bizmanehem. This takes us back to Rabbi Yochanan's drasha Bizmanehem. But not like Rabbi Yochanan's drasha. The essential meaning of the pasuk is Zmano Shel Zeh Lo Zmano Shel Zeh. They have different times, which means you have your time, you have your time. My time can't be your time if I'm in a different kind of city. And therefore, I don't have the option to read on your day. You got your day, I got my day. Saveima B'Tleisar. So perhaps the walled city should read on the 13th. The Ramban comments on this also. The answer is Kishushan. After all, in the event of that year, in the 12th year of Ahasuerus, the war took place on the 13th. The 14th was when everybody celebrated in the unwalled cities. The people in Shushan needed another day to finish their battle, and they celebrated on the 15th. So there'd be no reason to celebrate on the 13th. We want to follow the model of Shushan. So the question is Ashkechan Asiyah. After all, in Shushan, they celebrated. They didn't read the Megillah. There was no Megillah yet. They celebrated on the 15th. So as a Chiram and Alan, how do I know that we have to do the commemoration on the same day? Now, the possibility being raised here is a little bit awkward, which is I have a possibility that I read the Megillah on one day and celebrate on a different day. So we fix that immediately through the Pasuk. Amar Krav, Amim Ha'elin, is Karim V'Nasim, very famous Pasuk number 6. These days are remembered and performed or celebrated. Ivkash Zechira L'Asiya, the commemoration and the performance are associated with each other via juxtaposition. And therefore, we have to do the reading on the same day as performance. The 13th cannot be a day of performance, of fulfillment, because we follow Shushan. Therefore, the reading has to be on the same day. You're going to turn around and say, so how can we read on the 11th when we don't give Mashdoach Manot on the 11th? Good, so the 11th, 12th, and 13th are a special dispensation for the villagers. Okay, now, the Mishnah said that it's the times of Yoshua bin Nun. I mentioned this a couple minutes ago. But Nitin Deloki Aitana, our Mishnah does not follow this Tana. Tana, Bishuman Karcha Omer, Krachina Mukafin Chama Mimota Chashverosh Koin B'chamisha Asar. Shuman Karcha disagrees and says, what really is historically, seems to be more reasonable, which is that any city that was walled at the time of Achashverosh reads on the 15th. Because after all, Shushan itself was not a walled city in Yoshua's time. It didn't exist. My time of Bishuman Karcha, so why is Bishuman Karcha say what he does? The answer is fairly obvious. Kishushan, we follow Shushan. Ma Shushan Mukefa Chamami Mot HaChashverosh, just like Shushan was walled at the time of HaChashverosh. Vikorin B'chamisha Asar, they certainly read on the 15th because they celebrated that year on the 15th, and celebration and reading have to be on the same day. Af Kosh Mukefa Chamami Mot HaChashverosh, Korin B'chamisha Asar. Therefore, that's the rule. Any city that was walled, like Shushan at the time of HaChashverosh, reads on the 15th. Now this has two implications. It means that cities that were walled after Yoshua could read. It also means that a city whose wall had fallen down by the time of Achashverosh would not read on the 15th, because the main issue is, were they walled cities at the time of the story that we are celebrating? Now, that's Rabbi Shimon Karcha. What about our Tana? How did he get Yoshua? Atani did on my Tama, so I already mentioned the Yerushalmi. The Bavli has a different approach. Yalif Prazi Prazi. It's a Gzerah Shavah, where we find the same relatively unique word in two places. We have Hayudim HaPrazim, the unwalled cities, in Megillat Esther. Tivachak in Hayudim HaPrazim, or Tiv Hatam, in Sefer Dvarim, it says, Levad Me'arei HaPrazi Harbe Me'od. So in the war against Og, in Sefer, mentioned in Sefer Dvarim, Paragimel, Pasuk number 7, they defeated, they captured all sorts of fortresses and walled cities, besides all the unwalled cities. Now, this is referring to cities that are walled or unwalled at the time of the entrance into the land. Just like in the verse in Dvarim, the word prazi relates to cities that are walled or unwalled at the time of the entry into the land. So similarly here. Now, someone could turn around and ask, yes, but that's referring to walled cities at that time, and this is referring to walled cities at this time. So it should really be like a Rishon Korcha. But we have to remember that the Megillah is written in the shadow of Sefer Dvarim. In other words, the author of the Megillah and all the readership of the Megillah know Sefer Dvarim. And so therefore the author of the Megillah, following the notion of Gzeirah Shavah, is going to use a word which we already have an association with from an earlier Sefer in Tanakh. And therefore, if he uses the word Prazim, it's as if to say, use the model of Prazi from Sefer Dvarim with which you are already familiar. Now, we analyze now the dispute. I understand why Rabbi Shimon Karcha did not agree with our Tana and stuck to Shushan. The late Prazi Prazi. There is a general notion that a Gzeirah Shavah, seeing two words in disparate places that are somewhat similar, same root, and relatively rare, and therefore they connect to each other and informs, one informs about the other, is based on a Mesorah. Either you have a tradition to read it that way or you don't. So it's simple. Rabbi Shimon Karcha didn't have such a tradition. So why didn't our Tana accept Rabbi Shimon Karcha, which, as we said, is historically more appealing of reasoning, So my Tana, Dahayit Prazi Prazi. That's a simple answer, because he does have a tradition to read Prazi Prazi. So Hachi Kamar, this is what our question is. Well, Shushan da Abda Kaman. Our question really is, according to our Tana, who is Shushan following? After all, Shushan is celebrating on the 15th, and yet it's a city that wasn't walled at the time of Yoshua. Lo Keprazim velo Kemukafin. It's not following Prazim, it's on the 15th. It's not following Mukafim because it wasn't walled at the time. So Shushan is sort of like some weird middle city. Amarav of Amila Kadi, so we have the following answer. Shani Shushan, however, Nasabanes. Shushan is different because that's where the miracle happened. In other words, all other cities follow a general model, walled, unwalled, based on time of Yoshua. Shushan, where the main miracle happened and the focus of the miracle happened, both in the war, but also in all of the events leading up to the war, and afterwards with Esther, Mordechai, etc., they have a special rule, and they read on the 15th, imitating what Shushan did that year. Now, I understand our Tana, Medina u'Medina v'ir v'ir. Take a look, a very important pasuk, which is pasuk number 6. It says, in summing up the celebration of Purim, that these days are remembered and performed in every generation, family and family, city and city, district and district, etc. Why does it mention it that way? Medina v'Medina v'ir v'ir is Medina v'Medina l'chalek ben mukafin chomam v'rishum v'nu l'kafin chomam v'mod ha-shverosh. According to our Tana, a Medina, which is properly a fortress city, a walled city, why does it say Medina u'Medina? That some Medinot read on the 14th, some on the 15th, depending when they were walled at Yeshua's time or Ahasuerus' time. And year by year, why do we have city and city? L'chalek ben Shushan l'sharai arayot, ayarot. To distinguish between Shushan and other cities, because Shushan by right should read on the 14th, but we distinguish it because the miracle happened there. And therefore, that we need Medina Medina and Ir Va'ir. According to Rabbi Shimon Korcha, Bishlama Medina Medina l'chalek ben Shushan l'shar ayarot. I understand why I need Medina Medina to distinguish between Shushan and other cities, because Shushan reads on the 15th and others read on the 14th. I love the Ir Va'ir l'mayata, but now what do I need Ir Va'ir for? In other words, now I don't have three categories that I need to say distinguish between A and A prime and then B and B prime. All I need is one division. So what do I need Ir Va'ir for? And Amar Lach Rabbi Shimon Korcha, this is how he would answer. He said, our Tana is not such a comfortable position with this pasuk either. I don't need Medina Medina because I already know to read on different days because of Prazi Prazi. Ela Kral Adrasha Hudaata. So Rabbi Shimon Korcha says both I and Tana and the Tana of the Braita of the Mishnah, who say it's the times of Yoshua Binun, and I, who say it's the time of Achashverosh, we have to both agree that Medina Medina and Ir Va'ir is not there to distinguish between one city and another, or one district and another, but rather to give you a drasha. And what is that famous drasha? What did he say? Krach v'chol ha-samuch lo v'chol ha-nira imo. And it's Medina u'Medina means the city and the extension of the city. What is the extension of the city? Kol ha-samuch lo v'chol ha-nira imo. Anything that is close to it and anything that is seen with it. Meaning any part that is contiguous with the city and extends from the city, and anything that if looking from afar would be seen to be with the city. And later on we will deal with the specifics of what that includes. Nidon Kikrach is considered part of the city. This is why if you live outside of the walls of Yerushalayim, nonetheless you read on the 15th because you're part of that city of Yerushalayim. Now, ad kama, how far out of the city can you still be considered part of the city? What's called samuch? Rabbi Yirmiyah v'tem Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. Remember that name, Rabbi Yirmiyah or Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. What's his answer? K'machmatan l'tveria mil. Like the distance from chamat, to Tveria, which is in the Galil, near the Kinneret, one Roman mile. Now, v'lema mil, so just say a mile. And if you don't know how long a mile is, he's teaching you from Achmatan Latveria. He's teaching you that if you go from the one city to the other city, that is a mile. And now you know how long a mile is. And by the way, that's the Shiur. So if you have houses or settlements that are that close to a walled city, they're considered part of the walled city. Now, I told you to remember Rabbi Yirmiyah or Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba because as we had at the end of Masechet Tanit, where we had a relatively rare transmission sequence, and therefore we mentioned other things that had nothing to do with the topic. In that case, the topic of the sadness of the month of Av, We mention them anyways to mention other things of that transmission. We do the same thing here. V'yamar Rabbi Yirmiyah v'teimer Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Menatzpach tzofim amru. Menatzpach, which means those five letters in Hebrew that are written differently when they're in the middle of a word and when they're at the end of the word, were formulated by the tzofim being the Nevi'im. The simple read of this means that at Matan Torah and afterwards, there was only one form of the letter, and that would be the middle form of the letter, and that the Nevi'im came along and said, we're going to take these five letters and make a different form for the end of the word. Now, the Tispra, does that make sense? V'aktiv Eilah HaMitzvot, the verse at the end of Vayikra says, Eilah HaMitzvot, these are the mitzvot, which is read by the rabbis as a conclusion and a summary and a sealing. This is the mitzvot, and that's it. She'ein navir shay v'chadesh davar me'ata, meaning nobody's allowed to innovate any new rules. So how can they innovate new letters in a Sefer Torah, which have halachic implications of k'tiva and k'tiva kodesh, etc.? V'yodam Rav Chista, mem v'samach shevuluchot b'neis hayom din. Plus, we have a tradition that in the luchot, because the k'tav, the writing on the graphic of God going on the writing on the tablets went all the way through. Therefore, the mem and the samach stood by miracle. Well, how would a mem need a miracle to stand unless it was a mem that was a full circle, as we have a mem sofit, a final mem, which is a square? So how could he say b'neis hayom din? Unless it means that already at Matan Torah there were sofiot, there were final forms of letters. So the answer is in mihave havu. Really, there were final forms of letters. In other words, they had final forms and middle forms. They just didn't know which went where. That's what the tzofim did. The tzofim didn't make up the forms. They just decided which go where. In other words, the ones with the long stems are the ones that are round and complete, go at the end, and the other ones go in the middle. Yeah, sof sof eila mitzvot she'en navi atid v'chadesh tava mi'ata. You still have the same problem. How are they allowed to innovate anything, like which letters go where? Now, this is a little bit problematic because in the first case, you would argue that they're making something up. There were only 22 letters, not 27 different graphic forms. But now you're saying there were 27 graphic forms and nobody knew where these five go and where these five go. A determination does have to be made, otherwise you have paralysis. But we have a better answer here, which is going to solve this in a larger way, which is Ela shchachum v'chazru v'yistum. The answer is that they were fixed, and the Nevi'im through Nevuah, through Ruach HaKodesh, were able to discern what the original formulation was, and they simply restored it back to the way it originally was. Now, we have the same transmission. Not really a transmission, but the same Amora, with the option of it being a certain other Amora in the same two. Targum shel Torah unkus hager Amoram pir Rabbi Elazar Yeshua. The translation that we have of the Torah into Aramaic was written by Unklus, the convert, who was related to Roman nobility, and he was a student of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, which puts him in the same school as Rabbi Akiva, and also at the end of the first century. Targum shel Nevi'im, who wrote the traditional translation into Aramaic of the Nevi'im, which, by the way, is far more than just a translation, and more than Unklus, it is a commentary. Yonatan ben Uziel, who's a student of Hillel, Amarom v'chagai Zachari Malachi, and had a tradition that went all the way back to the last three Nevi'im from the 5th century BCE, 6th and 5th century BCE. Chagai and Zachari operated in 518, 517 BCE, 516 BCE, and Malachi, who operated about 50 years later, he had a tradition going all the way back to there of what the inner meaning and how to understand the prophets are. And so he published a targum. When he published it, Eretz Yisrael shook 400 parsot by 400 parsot. Yatzabat kol v'amram miuzeh shegilas starai livnei adama. A heavenly voice came out and said, who is publicizing my secrets to people? In other words, the books of Nevi'im have many, many secrets about the end of days, etc., and about all sorts of mystical concepts, and perhaps they're meant to remain mystical and undeciphered. And who is this who's publicizing it? Amad Yonatan ben Uziel Aragla v'yamar. So Yonatan ben Uziel stood up and said, Ani hu shigiliti starech al v'nei adam. I am the one who exposed your secrets to people. You know, God, that I did not do it for my own honor, not for the honor of my father, my family. I did it for your honor, Israel. There shouldn't be more dispute among Israel, and it's how to interpret, how to understand the Pasuk. There's the final word about what it meant. So Yonatan ben Uziel then wanted to publicize a Targum of Ktuvim, of those sections of Tanakh in what are called scriptures. The Bat Kol came out and said, enough, stop. So my time, why did it stop him? Somewhere, we assume, in the book of Daniel, there is the secret about when Mashiach is really coming, and that's something that is, should not be publicized. Good. Now, but Targum Shel Torah Unklus Agera Marot, and Unklus really, was he really the author who created the Targum? We have a tradition going back to Rav. The Pasuk in Nehemiah, Pasuk number 9 on the page, which describes the public reading of the Torah under the leadership of Ezra, that they read the Sefer Torah Meforash explicitly, the Som Sechel, etc. They paid attention and they understood. That means reading. Meforash, what's Meforash meaning? That's a Targum. That means they translated into Aramaic for the people. The Aramaic, times of Ezra, was the lingua franca. The Som Sechel, what's that? Elu Apsukin, they showed them where to stop. They showed them the punctuation. In other words, they read it correctly. But that means the Targum goes back 500 years before Unklus. The Amrila Elu Masorot, this might be Vayvinu Bamikra, maybe Piskei Tamim, and it may indeed be Masorot, meaning that how a particular word is used. So the answer is Chachum v'chazur v'yistum. Just as we said before with the forms of the letters, the Targum was around, it was forgotten, and Unklus was able to restore it based on the teachings of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Now, Maishna d'oraita d'lo izdaza. How come when Unklus publicized, or when Nehemiah, when Ezra publicized the Targum, Eretz Yisrael didn't shake? V'ad nevi'ah izdaza. And why, when with the prophets, Eretz Yisrael shook? In other words, why was heaven not displeased with publicizing a Targum of Torah? And was with Nevi'im. The answer is the Oraita Mifarsha Milta. The Torah has explicit words and it's meant to be understood explicitly. And therefore, whatever you do to help you understand it is important. Of course, we'll get to the story of Talmi Amelach on Daf Tet, and we'll see that there are limitations to that also. The Nevi'i Kamila de Farshan, within the Nevi'im, there's some things that are meant to be understood explicitly. The Kamila de Mesadman, there's some words that are meant to be kept under wraps. Dichtiv, we have as an example in Zechariah, Pasuk number 10. In that day there will be a great mourning and sadness in Yerushalayim, which are, we don't know who that is. And if it weren't for the Targum, Rav Yosef says, I would have no idea what this Pasuk means. And what does it mean? In other words, it's two things put together. On that day, the mispeid in Yerushalayim, the sadness in Yerushalayim will be so great, like the sadness when Achav ben Omri was killed by Hadad Rimon, and Chomispedad Yoshia bar Amon de Katal Yateh Par Hachagir v'Kat Megiddo, and like the great Hespeid when Yoshia was killed by Paronacho in Megiddo. So those two things are put together in the Pasuk, and I would have not known to make that connection without the Targum. The last piece we see today is for Aiti Ani Daniel of Adia Tamarev on Hashim Asher Ayuimi Lo Ra'u Tamarev Chardag Dolan Aflah Leim Vayruchu Beichave. So Daniel says, I saw some vision. They didn't see the vision, but they ran away because they were frightened. Maninu on Hashim. So who are these people? So Amar Rabbi Yirmi Abi Temer Rabbi Chia Baraba Zachagai Zachari Malachi. Three Nevi'im. Inu Adifi Minei V'yu Adif Minayu. They were greater than he was greater than they. Inu Adifimine, they were greater than he, the Inu and Nevi. They weren't prophets. Yulav Navi, David Daniel was not a prophet. Inu Adifimine, he was greater than them, the Yuchazu Inu Lochazu. He saw this vision and they didn't see it. The Chemiachar Lochazu, since they didn't see the vision, my time at Yvitu, so why were they scared? The answer is Avagav, the Inu Lochazu, Mazalai Yuchazu. They didn't see it, but their Mazal saw it. In other words, it felt like, a goose stepping out, walking over the grave or whatever. Amar Ravina Shmaminahai Madimi Vitafagav Diulochazi Mazle Chazi. So that proves to you that somebody who has a sudden scare for no reason, it means his mazel has seen something even if he didn't see it. So my takante, what should he do? Likur Kriyachma. Say Kriyachma, that will calm you down and get rid of whatever it is threatening your mazel. Be kind, welcome to Nofet. If you're standing in a dirty place where you can't say Kriyat Shema, lin shof miduchte arba garmidi. You should jump 4 steps away and say Kriyat Shema. Below, if you can't do that, lema hachi. Say the following to whatever demon's after you. Inza de beta bacha shmina minoi. The goat that's in the slaughterhouse is fatter than I am. Go take that and leave me alone. Mietz Hashem on Sunday, we will continue with this, and we will continue up until the Mishnah and Daf Hei Amud Aleph. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos.